hated each other if they had. But it occurred to me that Shira and Tamid had made it out of Dustwalk together. They had survived. They had survived what I'd done to them. They'd been together when I'd left them behind. That had to mean something. It was a mistake to arrange this execution without consulting me, Kadir. I caught the edge of the Sultan's conversation as I brushed by. He was furious. The city is already restless. You should dispose of her in private, like you did her child. Hala had succeeded in convincing the Sultan that the harem had watched Kadir murder Fadi. Good. He was safe. She is my wife. Kadir sounded violent, even in the face of his father's calmer anger. She is mine to do with what I please. Kadir spotted me as he spun away on his heel from his father. A nasty smile spread over his face. You, he shot the order to Emin. You're dismissed. Go find somewhere else to be. I sensed the other Demji tense behind me, but he couldn't refuse. He sketched a quick bow before ducking out. I'm glad you're here. Kadir sidled across the balcony towards me. My eyes darted for the Sultan, inadvertently, looking for help, but his attention was elsewhere. Rahim was nowhere in sight either. Tamid was watching us, but there'd be no help from him. Even if he didn't hate me, he was no match for a prince. Kadir's hand found the small of my back, like he thought I was some puppet and he could pull all my strings. He shoved me past two of his wives, who were watching from behind the lattice screen, hiding from the crowd, out into the open at the edge of the balcony, where I was exposed. A few eyes from the crowd drew up towards us as we appeared. You tried to help her get away. Kadir leaned into me, the pressure of his body forcing me against the railing, trapping me between him and open air, and the sight of my cousin below. I could feel every inch of my body that he was touching, fighting back against the feeling of him pressed to me. I hated more than anything that I couldn't fight back. His breath was hot on my neck as he spoke. And now I want you to watch her die. I didn't need him to make me watch her die. No matter what happened, I would give her that. I wouldn't do it for Kadir. I'd do it for Shira. Because whatever else she was my flesh and blood, and she deserved that much from me. She deserved a whole lot more, in fact, but this was all I had to give. A roar came with Shira's appearance on stage. Some of it was jeers, but those were drowned out quickly. She had been right not to change, I realized now. Shira, in her silks and muslins and jewels and fine makeup, looked like nobility. But as she was now, dressed in a plain white khalat, she looked like a desert girl. She looked like one of the crowd she was facing, not something out of the palace. Folk were cheering for her, I realized, not for her head. When she stepped up onto the stone, she was still shaking, her naked feet barely holding her up. The restless crowd settled enough to listen as the executioner started to announce her so-called crimes. Shira stood with her head held high, back as straight as an iron bar. A light breeze picked up her hair. It was long and loose around her shoulders, and it moved enough to expose her neck. The wind seemed to draw her eyes up. She tilted her head back, spotting me and Kadir on the balcony easily. She ignored her husband, locking gazes with me instead. There was a slight curve to her mouth. That was the only warning I had. The executioner was still reading. For treason against the Sultim. I am loyal to the true Sultim. The words burst out of Shira's lips, startling the executioner into silence. "The true Sultim, Prince Ahmed." Her words stirred an answer in the crowd. "He was chosen by fate at the trials, not by the hands of his father. A father who himself defied our traditions. I know the will of the Jinn, and they are punishing these false rulers. Kadir will never be able to give our country an heir." A rush of pride swelled in my chest. The Sultan had been right. It was a mistake to execute her in public. Kadir had given his legendary Sultima the biggest stage in Miraji to spill all their secrets on. She was one girl, seconds away from death, and she was using her last breath to do more than a rain of pamphlets from a rock could. Even if they silenced her now, this story would spread all over Miraji and get grander with every retelling. "If Kadir ever sits on the throne, he will be the last Sultan of Miraji." Kadir shoved me away from him as his Sultima spoke, pushing back inside, shouting orders. But he was far too late. The damage was done, and silencing her now looked like they were trying to stifle the truth. I didn't move, though I caught the Sultan's gaze for just a moment. He looked resigned, as if he knew this would come out of his son's stupidity. "He will die without an heir to take his place, and our country will fall back into foreign hands." Shira was still talking, her voice carrying over the beginnings of restlessness in the crowd. "The same foreign hands that the false Sultan makes deals with behind closed doors. Prince Ahmed is Miraji's only hope. He is the true heir." She was still shouting as the guards wrestled her forward, forcing her head down onto the block. "A new dawn," she screamed, as a guard forced her head down so hard that her chin connected with the block, opening a huge gash. The din of the crowd was drowning out anything more she would have said, but she held my gaze as the executioner stepped up. I leaned forward, closing the distance between us as much as I could, my hips pressed against the railing, my body craning over the balcony. I held her eyes until the axe came down. Chapter 34. I couldn't tell where the first stone came from. It sailed out of the crowd, smacking into the wall next to the balcony. "A new dawn," someone screamed from the crowd. "A new desert." The rebellion's cry picked up all around the square. The crowd below turned into a mob with frightening speed. Another rock flew, smacking into the screen around the balcony. The closest guard flinched back. Those out in the open with me were already retreating. I saw the bomb as it prepared to sail, a flash of fire in the crowd, a bottle stuck with a burning cloth aimed towards the balcony. I dove for cover inside. Even as I prepared to hit the ground, I spotted Tamid staring through the screen, eyes pressed to the openings, fingers laced through the carved wood. I grabbed him and pulled him to the ground, sprawling, even as the bottle struck the screen, exploding in a burst of flames and glass against the wood. When I looked up, coughing, some of the screen was missing. The rest was catching fire. There was another soldier who'd been standing too close, sprawled near us, crying out in agony as blood bloomed across one ruined side of his face. Tamid stared at the man, eyes wide. I supposed he wasn't quite so used to dodging death as I was.
"Bottle bombs, just like we used to make back home,"
I offered, pushing myself off him.
I checked around quickly, making sure no one had noticed.
The chaos was a distraction. The Sultan had already vanished. Gone to safety or to give orders to fortify the palace, I figured. To quell the crowds.
I just hoped the rebellion was ready to protect them. We need to find cover. I offered my former friend a hand up. Come on. Thamid got us back to his room safely, through hallways choked with soldiers, headed into the streets to keep the peace. Hundreds of men passing us, their boots pounding into the marble floor. He slammed the door behind us and bolted it shut. He leaned on the door for a moment, out of breath, as I slumped into the chair at his desk, while he took another by the balcony. We lapsed into uncomfortable silence. I could hear the rioting outside over our ragged breathing, shouts of rebellion, gunfire. Once, something that sounded like an explosion. I thought I might have seen the flash of light it gave off across Tamid's face as he peered out over the city. And I was stuck in here, helpless. Gradually, my breathing slowed as night fell outside. The rioting faded to the back of my consciousness. I was left listening to the roar of grief in my head instead. I'd been helpless to save Shira, too. I'd watched her die. I might not have always liked her, but I'd never wanted her dead. And now she was gone. Another casualty of the cause. I could have gone back to the harem, but I wanted to be there even less than I wanted to be here. When it got too dark to see, Tamid started to work his way around the room, his metal leg clicking with every step, lighting oil lamps as he went. There was a book open on the table. I noticed it as the lamp above it came alive. A picture, fiercer than any of the faded drawings I'd ever seen in the books that found their way down to Dustwalk, glared out of the pages. It was a genie made of blue fire, standing next to a girl with blue eyes with the sun in her hands. Princess Hawa. Do you have anything to drink in here? I asked, finally, when the last lamp was lit and I couldn't take it anymore. Remember in Dustwalk, when anybody died, everybody got together for a drink to honor the dead. Or are you too holy to drink now? Did you drink to me after you left me for dead? Tamid asked, shaking out the match. After leaving Dustwalk, I remembered drinking with Jin in a bar in Sazi. I didn't even know why I was drinking then. I wanted to say I was sorry again, but my silence spoke for me. Tamid pulled open a cupboard. It was lined with jars and bottles of stuff that looked more like poison than booze. But he reached towards the back and pulled out a half-empty bottle with the label scratched off. There was no mistaking the amber liquid inside. I only drank because you were a bad influence anyway. He pulled the cork from the bottle. I only have one glass. He poured a measure into a glass and another into an empty jar. I don't get that many guests around here. He handed me the jar. That wasn't what it had looked like with Layla, but maybe they had better things to do than drink together. The jar is clean, I promise. If I wanted you dead, you're right, I could have already done it. To the dead, I said. I took a sip, burning away the smart retort on the tip of my tongue before I could say something I'd regret. Who weren't so lucky as me? Tamid rolled his glass between his palms. I didn't think you'd care about Shira. I wished I had it in me to be angry about that, but he wasn't wrong. The girl I was when I'd left Tamid bleeding in the sand wouldn't have cared. But the world was bigger than Dustwalk, it turned out. Well, I guess you were wrong. We fell silent again as I sipped at my liquor, letting it burn on the way down. Tamid just stared at his own glass. Finally, he seemed to decide something. Layla says you're planning to abduct me. Abduct is an awfully strong word. I'd accused Jin of abducting me once, but we'd both known that was a lie. I'd wanted to go, even if it had meant leaving Tamid. But yeah, more or less. Why? Is it just that you don't want me helping the Sultan anymore? He didn't look at me. Or did Layla just ask you too sweetly to refuse? Or is it that... What was it you said? You're in the business of saving lives now? There was scorn on his tongue, but he was giving me a chance to be honest with him. I couldn't waste it. Because I wouldn't leave you behind if I got the chance again. It slipped out as easily as only the truth could. My gaze was fixed on his fake leg. You never wanted to run away with me. And that was a reason to leave me to die, was it? It had been the wrong thing to say. He leaned away from me, taking away whatever small distance I'd closed between us by saving him on the balcony, by sharing a drink with him here. That's not what I meant, and you know it. I didn't want to fight with him. I didn't want to fight any more at all today. I just wanted my friend back when I'd already lost one to the executioner. I'm just saying, you wouldn't even run away from somewhere you hated with your oldest friend. I'm having trouble imagining that you've now become the sort to run off with a princess. Are you really going to leave with Layla? You're not going to try to snitch on us to her father? I tried to sound disinterested, but a lot of folk would die if Tamid decided he was loyal to the Sultan. You can't blame me for having my doubts. Between the two of us, there's only one who's in a habit of running away with royalty. Tamid looked up at me over his glass so fast, I knew he'd been faking disinterest in me. That foreigner who stole the Buraki was royalty? I realized I'd said it without meaning to. Slipped out, as natural as if I could still trust Tamid. His name is Jin, I said. And yes. Where is he now? I'd managed not to ask myself that question since Ayed had caught me with Sam in the garden. But in that moment, when I was sure she was going to turn us in and it was all going to end, one stupid thought had flitted through my head. I wasn't ever going to see Jin again. I might die, and he was off doing God knew what, God knew where, with God knew who. The thought that had chased it was selfish. If he were here, Jin wouldn't let me die. He would leave the captured Jin in the Sultan's hands, risk everything before he'd let me die. Your guess is as good as mine. I drank. Not all that great being left behind by someone you're in love with, is it? Tamid raised his glass in a salute before taking a sip. You only ever thought you were in love with me. But I couldn't say it out loud. That caught me off guard. No, I admitted into my drink. It's not. We were silent. What about you and Layla? I asked finally. Where will you two go if we do get you out? Maybe home? Tamid shrugged. Back to Dust Walk? I scoffed without meaning to. Tamid looked up, offended. Oh, come on, I defended. Maybe you didn't want to leave like you did, but don't tell me after seeing everything else that's out here, you just want to go back to that hellhole. Or do you have fonder memories of all the names that town called you than I do? I'm not like you, Amani. All I ever wanted was a simple life as a holy man with a wife. I always figured you'd change your mind and see it my way eventually. Dark eyes darted to me before sliding away again. The memory of him proposing marriage was heavy between us. There was a part of him that still didn't understand. I could see that now more clearly than I'd ever been able to back in Dustwalk. I'd move the whole world to make up for what I'd done to Tamid, but I wouldn't ever give it up for him. Not for anyone. The difference was, Jin had never asked me to. He'd taken my hand to show it to me instead. This life, Jean, princes, it's too much for me. I haven't changed my mind about what I want in this life, Amani. And neither have you. A thought struck me, and I couldn't hold back the laugh that bubbled up. I pressed the back of my hand to my mouth as I nearly choked on my drink. Tamid looked at me askance. I'm not laughing at you. I waved a hand at him, my nose burning from the liquor. I was trying to picture your father if you brought a princess home for a wife. I saw it dawn on Tamid's face, too. He rolled his eyes skyward. God save me. Tamid's father was a hard man. He tried to drown Tamid as a baby when he was born with a crooked leg. He was also patriotic to the very core. He invoked the Sultan's name at every occasion. What would the Sultan think of my weakling of a son, Tamid? What would the Sultan think that a boy in his country can be bested by a girl, Tamid? What would the Sultan think of you taking his daughter to wife, Tamid? I did my best imitation of Tamid's father, like I had when we lived in Dustwalk. Tamid dropped his head into his hands, but he was smiling as I laughed, the alcohol making me feel lighter. What about you? Tamid rolled his glass between his hands, the faint smile lingering. You can't leave. In this grand escape plan, what happens to you? I'd been wondering that too. The thought was suddenly sobering. Shahzad had always been willing to give up her own life for the rebellion, but I didn't know whether she'd be willing to give up mine, or if I'd have to do it myself. Amin had already volunteered if she couldn't. I don't leave this palace so long as the Sultan's got control over me. I tried to shrug casually, but Tamid had known me far too long. He could read me better than anyone. Almost anyone. Jin had understood who I was better than Tamid ever had, and Shahzad had seen who I could be. Tamid had always seen who he wanted to. But he still knew when I was hiding something. Traitor eyes. I'd die for this, Tamid. I don't want to have to. I'd do just about anything to not have to. I listened to the roar of the crowds outside. But it's a whole lot bigger than my life or anyone else's. Tamid set his glass down. I want you to know I don't believe in your rebellion. I figured. I downed the rest of my drink. And your prince is as likely to destroy this country as anything else. I figured that too, but I didn't say that. But you were right. I don't hate you enough to want to watch you die. Take your shirt off. That wasn't what I'd been expecting him to say. Do you say that to all the girls? It slipped out. It was a stupid thing to say to someone who wasn't my friend anymore, who'd been in love with me once. It was stupid to make a joke when Shira's blood was still cooling in the square and the riot in the streets was still raging. But against all odds, Tamid laughed. He laughed exactly like he used to, with a slight roll of his eyes, like he wanted me to think he was humoring me by laughing. But I knew him better than that. No. Tamid picked up a tiny knife with a blade no longer than one of my fingernails.
Just the ones I'm about to cut a piece of bronze out of.
He was serious, I realized. He was going to help me. He knew where the pieces of metal in my skin were. He could take out the one controlling me, that forced me to stay here. He was going to save my life. Chapter 35. I could hear Aurangzeb already starting on the other side of the wall. The sound of laughter drifted through, high and clear like a bell, a riot of voices, Marajin and foreign alike, and music running like a soft current underneath. We stood in the shadow of the harem walls outside the gate, whispering knots of perfectly made-up girls all around me. They kept their distance from me. Nobody in the harem seemed to know exactly what I'd had to do with the events around the blessed Saltima, but that hadn't stopped the rumors from spreading. Some were even saying they'd seen me help Kadir drown Fadi. I knew they were lying because Hala wasn't stupid or spiteful enough to plant that image in their heads. I cast around for Layla, an ally, but I couldn't find her in the dim light leaking through from the other garden. The shuffle of cloth and breathing and the occasional excited whisper were the only sounds to be heard on our side. We were like penned creatures waiting. I forced out a long breath, trying to calm my racing heart. This was it. Tonight we freed the Jean and Layla, and one way or another it was my last night in the harem. My left hand strayed to my side, a nervous habit I'd been trying to break the last few days. The last thing I needed was anyone noticing the tiny healing cut under my arm, where Tamid had sliced the piece of bronze out of my skin. The iron was still there. He told me without meeting my gaze that he hadn't exactly planned on getting the shards of metal out, that I might bleed out if he tried. But I understood the truth of it. He was willing to help me escape, but he wasn't going to help the rebellion by giving me back my power. He wasn't a traitor like me. The riots had lasted all night after Shira died. They were being called the Blessed Saltima's Uprising, for now. But stories were written by the winners. If we lost this war, chances were the name would change to the Disgraced Saltima's Uprising. They'd left a tension in the air that put a frantic damper on the preparations for Aurangzeb. I could feel it even inside the safety of the palace walls. When daybreak had come after the night of rioting, the rebellion had claimed part of the city. Sam told me our side had used the riots to erect barricades all the way, hemming off most of the slums and some other parts of the city to claim them in the name of the rebellion. In one night, we'd taken rebel ground in the capital itself. If that didn't send a message, I didn't know what would. There were suns painted on buildings across the city, and most unsettlingly, there was one in bright red paint smeared on a wall at the heart of the palace. Nobody could account for that, except for Emine, that is. But she was now a tiny, doe-eyed servant in the kitchen, and no one would suspect someone so small to be able to reach that high. The dawn had also found the streets littered with bodies. A whole lot of them were wearing uniforms. According to Sam, Shahzad had run a flawless strategy, even if it was in city streets instead of a battlefield. And even if some of her troops thought they were just looting and burning, she'd managed to nudge them carefully one way or another, leading them like soldiers, even if they didn't know it. Still, even though we'd won more than we'd lost, there was a nervous edge among the rebels. If there was ever a time for the Sultan to turn his new genie army out against us, it was now. But it had been 3 days, and no immortals walked the streets yet. This was still a war among humans and Demji.
And tonight, I was about to get back to the side I belonged on. The servants of the harem had dressed me in Mirajin colors, white and gold, like the army. Only I looked like a different kind of soldier. The white glowed pale and rich next to my desert dark skin. The cloth clung to my skin like a lover's fingers, ending in a hem heavy with golden stitching that climbed upwards, scattered with pearls. I imagined walking past Kadir's wives and them grabbing at my kalat like they did at the pearls underwater. My arms were bare from the elbows down, except where golden bracelets rattled heavily at my wrists. In the burnished light, the gold powder that had been dusted over my whole body made it seem like the sun lived under my skin. They had clucked over my shorn hair before finally resigning themselves to running sweet-smelling oils through it so that it stayed straight. They wove my hair through with strands of pure gold, threads of it that mixed in with the black and caught the light. I found it hard to care about my shorn hair anymore. Whatever anger I'd ever had at Ayat left me when I saw her curled up on the floor of the prison, dead-eyed. She'd fought and she'd lost, and I felt sorry for her. When they were done, they crowned me with a tiny circlet made of miniature gold leaves with pearls as berries. My mouth had been stained darker gold. Every woman from the harem who was being allowed into the party was dressed in the same colors as I was, Mirajin, gold, and white. But I was blinding, like some untouchable gold sculpture that had been crafted to place in a palace and be admired. There was nothing of the desert girl left. I looked more beautiful than I'd ever seen myself, but unnatural, like a stranger. But I knew who I was. I was still a rebel. And tonight, we were going to strike a real blow. Announcing? The call came from the other side of the door. The flowers of the harem. A hush fell over the crowd, expectant. The doors swung open. The girls around me rushed forward like children towards a new gift. I was jostled as I followed at a slower pace. I imagined, for the guests, it was like watching birds burst free from their cages, a surge of white and gold as we were released among the people. The gardens were seductive in the late afternoon light. Fountains bubbled happily among guests in their finest clothes, music twisting its spell with the smells of jasmine and sweet food. High above us, the sky was strung with golden ropes from one side of the garden to the other. Small glass decorations hung from them, catching the light. When I craned my head back, I saw they were crystal birds hanging from the golden wires. A servant passed me with a tray of soft cakes dusted in white powder. I took one and shoved it into my mouth, tasting the sugar exploding on my tongue as it melted there. I tried to savor it, but it dissolved quickly, until only the memory was left between the tip of my tongue and the top of my mouth. I heard whispers go up in the crowd as we passed. The Albish Queen's eyes swept over one of the girls, who was wearing a sheer muslin dress that showed a whole lot more of her than you'd expect, and glanced away in disgust, smoothing her hands over her own full, heavy skirts. I ignored her, my eyes darting around for faces I knew, for Shahzad or Rahim. I caught the Sultan's gaze through the crowd. Some of the revelers looked like they had already started celebrating like the next dawn would never come. But not our exalted ruler. He was as sharp as anything. He raised a still full glass to me in greeting before his attention was pulled elsewhere. I let out a long breath. I couldn't look suspicious. I took a slow route around the gardens instead, like I wasn't looking for anyone at all. Rahim found me before I could make it very far. "I've been assigned to keep an eye on you tonight by my exalted father."
He was wearing a crisp white dress uniform and a sword at his side that didn't look decorative to me.
There are a fair few foreigners around, and apparently, even after nearly getting you killed once, I can still be trusted.
Once I lost someone a hand during an ambush. It had been early in the rebellion, after Fahali, before getting a bullet to the stomach. It was my fault. When Ahmed sent me out again in a similar raid, I asked if he was really going to trust me. He said I was a lot less likely to make the mistake a second time than someone else was to make it the first.
Well, let's hope that's the only thing my brother and my exalted father have in common. On that note, let's go find your rebellion.
He extended an arm to me. I held up my gold-dusted hands apologetically.
Ah.
He dropped his arm.
Of course. Look, but don't touch.
We walked side by side through the glow of the garden. On a night like this, it would be easy to forget we were celebrating the Sultan's coup. 2 decades ago, to the day, he had allied with the Galen and taken our country by force. The sun had gone down with Sultan Oman's father on the throne. Dawn had found him dead in his bed, and the palace packed with Galen uniforms. The Sultan was found face down in a garden like he had tried to run. Many of the Sultan's other brothers met the same fate. He couldn't afford any challenges to his throne. He'd left only the women and the brothers who were younger than him alive. 20 years ago tonight, the palace had been full of death and blood. Now, soft lights and music drifted through the walls, and the buzz of conversation seemed to lull us all away from any memories of that night. Except there were the statues. Among the guests and the musicians and the servants passing around wine and food, the garden was dotted with statues made of what looked like clay and bronze. They were frozen in agonizingly twisted shapes, buckled to their knees, arms up like they were protecting themselves.
I knew Prince Hakim when he was a boy, you know.
Speaker was some Marajin lord or other, talking to a young, pretty girl. He was gesturing at a statue. They were the princes. Bronze sculptures of the 12 princes the Sultan had killed when he took his throne. Someone had rested a glass in one of their upturned palms, leaving the dead prince's agonized face to stare up at a half-finished wine glass smudged with oily fingerprints.
Well, those are in bad taste,
a voice said in my ear, making me jump. A server was standing by my elbow with a tray piled with basbousa. I had an odd feeling of recognizing him, only I didn't, until he rolled his eyes skywards.
Emin,
I cast around carefully in case we were overheard.
Those colors don't suit you at all, by the way.
His eyes swept me appraisingly. If I'd had any doubt left in my mind that it was him, it evaporated at the disdain in those bright yellow eyes that betrayed him as a Demji.
He's one of yours, Rahim guessed. How did he get in?
He didn't know the half of it, and now wasn't the time to explain that Emin was the same tiny female servant Rahim had helped abduct Shira's baby a few days earlier.
I've got my ways.
Emin took a piece of the sweet cake off his own tray and put it in his mouth.
Shahzad is looking for you two.
He licked his fingers clean and pointed. Shahzad was a little way off, hair wrapped in tight braids around her head like a crown.
She says it's high time you kept up your side of the bargain and introduced us to whoever's got this so-called army of yours. She's with your rebellion?
Rahim inspected Shahzad skeptically across the garden.
General Hamad's daughter? I always thought she was just a pretty face.
So does everyone else, I said, That's how he figured she wouldn't get searched too closely on the way in. Jazad's the one who carried in enough explosives to free every genie down in the vaults.
Explosives, Rahim repeated. He sounded nervous.
You didn't tell him about the plan?
Emin asked, shoving more food into his mouth. We didn't even have a plan until a few days ago, I said defensively. I've been busy since then. My hand drifted again to the tiny cut in my side. Emin turned to Rahim.
According to Shahzad, every Aurangzeb, when the sun sets, the Sultan gives a speech, which means that all eyes will be on him. Using that as cover, Sam will sneak Amani and Shahzad through the walls and out of the party.
Emin jerked his head sideways, indicating our imposter blue-eyed bandit. My eyes skated straight over him before I spied him. He was dressed in an Albish army uniform. So that was how he was getting around inconspicuously. Isn't it a crime to impersonate a soldier? My heart was starting to beat painfully in my chest now. There was so much that could go wrong tonight. Not being wholly sure I could count on Sam was just one of them.
I hear it's a crime to desert the Albish army, too.
Emin sucked on his teeth, moving around a seed caught there. He made a terrible servant. It was amazing that he'd gotten this far without getting caught. But he was right. The uniform fit Sam too well to have been stolen, too well to be anything but tailored for him. My eyes went to the congregation of Albish soldiers accompanying their queen here. It was a huge risk he was taking as a deserter in their midst, and he was taking it for us. Even as I watched him, his eyes dashed across the garden, landing on Shahzad, who had started to cross the garden toward us. Sam's eyes never left her. No, I realized, not exactly for us. Damn. I'd seen men fall for Shahzad before, but I'd never seen her fall back. This couldn't end well.
Hala will meet you on the other side of the wall, Emin went on. She'll make you disappear long enough that you can get to the Jean and set the explosives.
And my sister? Rahim asked. He was casting around the garden for her. Come to think of it, I still hadn't seen her either.
You're not a very patient man.
Emin took his time, deliberately chewing.
If everything goes according to plan, Sam will get Shahzad and Amani out of the palace straight from the vaults, and then double back through that wall for you and your sister.
He nodded again, the other way this time. You get Layla and wait for Sam in the southeast corner of the garden, away from the chaos that's bound to come when something blows up in the palace, I said, shifting carefully as someone brushed past us, dangerously close to overhearing our conversation.
Then we figure Hala will get to meet out under cover of an illusion, and I will get out in the chaos, just looking like another servant running from an explosion. What could possibly go wrong?
A lot could go wrong, Rahim pointed out.
It's still far from being the worst plan we've ever come up with.
I tried to comfort him.
No, the worst we've ever come up with ended with you flooding a prayer house,
Emin offered, which was true, but far from helpful right now.
So that's not really saying much.
Everybody survived that, I said defensively. Rahim was looking at me, an uneasy look on his face.
Welcome to the rebellion.
Shahzad had reached us. She greeted Rahim with a devastating smile.
We make do with what we can get. Now, are you going to give us an army or not?
We found Lord Bilal, Emir of Ilyaz, leaning against one of the grotesque sculptures, eyes hooded. He was young, but he looked like he was already exhausted by life, or maybe by his own importance. It didn't seem smart to tell him that out loud when we were trying to form an alliance.
I probably ought to let Shahzad talk. So, Lord Bilal looked me over. You're the blue-eyed rebel everyone is talking about.
He glanced at Shahzad.
And you must be the face of the operation. You're too pretty to be anything else. I watched my friend bite down on her annoyance. And you're the emir looking to turn rebel.
She wore a bright smile the whole time and flapped her hands airily. Looking at her, you'd think she was just a beautiful girl flirting with a man, not a rebel planning a full-scale war. I realized why he'd chosen to wait for us here in this corner of the garden. The music that drifted through the walls covered any conversation around us. I could only guess it covered our words, too. Still, Shahzad spoke quietly.
I'm my father's son.
Lord Bilal shrugged one elaborately tasseled shoulder lazily. I thought I caught what looked like a skeptical eye roll from Rahim, but when I looked at him head on, he was ever the soldier. Rahim had served under Lord Bilal's father first. He'd know better than anyone if the son lived up to the father.
My father had no loyalty to the throne. He never forgave Sultan Oman for turning Miraji over to foreign hands. He used to go on and on about how Ilyaz is the most powerful county in Miraji, how the rest of the country depended on us. He'd tell you until your ears bled how Ilyaz didn't need the rest of Miraji. It could survive as an independent nation.
Are you saying you want your own country in exchange for your army?
That sure wasn't asking for much. Are you in a position to negotiate that with me?
Abducting Delilah without permission was one thing. Giving away part of Ahmed's country without his permission, that wasn't something even Shahzad and I could do.
No, Shahzad said finally. Even I'm not pretty enough for that.
I snorted under my breath. She went to elbow me in the side, almost forgetting where we were, but caught herself before she did, turning it into a gesture, rearranging her sleeve.
But we can get you to Ahmed.
Shahzad paused pointedly.
Provided you can give me some numbers that will impress me.
Lord Bilal raised an eyebrow at Rahim. His commander stepped in easily.
There are 3,000 men garrisoned at Ilyaz, twice that number retired in the province who can be called upon.
And you have enough weapons to arm them all? Shahzad disguised the tactical question with a careful laugh, touching Rahim's arm as if he'd just said something hilariously funny.
Amani.
Amin, in the guise of a servant, appeared again at our side with an elaborate bow.
The Sultan is headed this way.
I traded a glance with Shahzad. Go, she said.
I've got this.
My stomach was too tied in knots to eat or drink as I left them. I made a show of inspecting the horrible statues that surrounded the garden, to keep from glancing over my shoulder every few moments at Shahzad and Lord Bilal in negotiations, Rahim in between them. The statues' bronze faces reminded me of Norsham. Only his bronze mask had been smooth and featureless. These were wretched reminders of what the Sultan could do to us if he caught us in our treason before we could escape.
Announcing, the voice rang out through the courtyard again. Prince Bao of the glorious Empire of Sicha.
I felt that tug of something that reminded me of Jin. A small crowd of Sichian men stood at the top of the stairs. They were dressed in bright clothes that looked as foreign as anything I'd ever seen the Galen wear, but entirely different at the same time. I'd seen the occasional Sichian dress on Delilah, but there wasn't a single woman among them. A green and blue robe was draped over the narrow frame of the man at the head of the party. The six men around him were of similar builds. They reminded me of Mahdi and the rest of Ahmed's scholarly set. Except for one figure at the back. He wasn't taller, but his shoulders were broader than those of the scholarly-looking men that surrounded him, and he held himself like he was ready for a fight. My mouth went dry. Instead of snapping, the string tugged harder. I took a step forward without meaning to, trying to get a closer look. Through the crowd, among the mass of people, his face swung straight towards me, like we were tied together by some invisible bond, like we were the needles of the paired compasses. Jin's eyes found mine. I was wrong. He didn't have his father's smile, because that troublemaker curve to his mouth was all ours. Chapter 36. There was an entire garden between us, and we were on enemy ground. One mistake, one false move could cost the whole rebellion, and still it took everything in me to keep my feet grounded, not to obey that tug. It was more painful than any order the Sultan had ever given me. Jin leaned in and whispered something to the Sichian man next to him as they descended the steps into the garden. The man nodded, turning to say something back. The crowd shifted and he vanished. I battled my instinct to move towards him, to fight my way through the crowd and damn the Sultan watching me. I started to move slowly towards where I'd seen him disappear. Or as slowly as I could, with my heart beating out the rhythm of gunfire. I dodged around foreigners in strange clothes, Marajine folks in fine colors, dangerous men in uniforms. Only I couldn't see him. I'd lost him. Again. Amani. His voice by my ear sounded exactly the same way it had the last time I'd seen him. In the desert, on the run, breathless from kissing me in the tent. When I turned around, he was so close I could have reached out and touched him. Only if there was one surefire way for us to both die as gruesome a death as the bronze man around us, that would be it. His eyes traveled the length of me, from the top of my perfectly combed head all the way to my bare feet. I was suddenly more keenly aware of my appearance than I'd been all night. That I was a golden glowing girl, not wearing a whole lot, who'd been polished like the other harem girls for the express purpose of being looked at by other men, but not touched. The other Sichian man with Jin was doing exactly that, his gaze snaking across every piece of uncovered skin I had. But Jin didn't seem to notice that I was painted gold and on display as if to taunt him. "You cut your hair," he said finally. It was such a thing for him to notice among everything else. The clearest wound I wore in the open of everything that had happened in the walls of the harem. Not deliberately. It was too much to explain to him now everything that had happened. But Jin could read some of it on my face, in the two-word answer. Amani, did they? He stopped himself. Did they hurt you, stalled there? I knew why. If someone had hurt me and he hadn't been able to stop it, I didn't know what the chances were that he'd forgive himself. Are you all right? Now that was a heavy question. I'll live. His face changed, hand curling into a fist at his side, and when he spoke again, his voice was low and urgent. I swear to God, if he's hurt you, Amani, I will make him suffer for it. Didn't have to guess who he was. The Sultan. You don't believe in God. It was all I could think to say. His hand twitched forward, like he wanted to pull me to him, away from everything else happening around us.
"Then I swear to you."
I had to ball my hands together to not reach for him. I remembered being little, my arms shaking from the effort of holding up a rifle too heavy for a 10-year-old. All I wanted in the entire world was to let the gun drop, to release my hands and let it fall. The effort of holding it up was too much. It was tearing into my muscle. But staying alive depended on me holding that rifle up, learning to shoot. I kept my arms where they were, shaking with effort. "Jin," I said as low as I could in Mirajin, "it's not safe for us to talk."
"I really don't give a damn about safe or not."
His voice was low and sure, and for a moment I thought he really might grab me, just take my hand and run us both out of there. Then he remembered himself. The gesture turned into a bow as he stepped out of the way of the man behind him. It was one of the Sichuan men, trailing him like a shadow.
"I'm the translator for Prince Bao tonight, of the Sichuan Empire, so as long as we talk through him, we'll be fine."
The man inclined his head, oblivious, saying something in Sichuan. "What happened to his other translator?" I asked through what I hoped was a deceptively polite smile.
"He came down with a bad case of broken ribs this afternoon."
Jin winked at me over the prince's head, which was still bowed in front of me.
"The prince has a weakness for beautiful women, so it wasn't all that hard to steer him over to you. Say something back as if I've been translating to you."
I hadn't seen Jin in 2 months, and last time we'd been fighting, and his hands had been inside my clothes and his mouth over mine. There were months of unspilled words between us. Not to mention, I probably ought to let him know that as soon as the last of the light that was currently stretching our shadows faded, there was the small matter of freeing a whole lot of Jin. There was too much to say, and too little time, and it was too hard to spill it all through a polite smile. "Where the hell have you been?" I asked finally, through a forced smile at Prince Bao, as if I was talking to him and not demanding an explanation through my teeth. I didn't catch Jin's expression as he turned away from me and said something quick in Sichuan. I recognized it as some sort of polite platitude. The man said something back, nodding and smiling, handing it to Jin to translate. And finally, Jin could turn back to me.
"I was looking for you."
His right hand was still curled into a fist, bouncing tensely against his leg. "Well, that was stupid," I said, and Jin stifled a laugh as I pressed my lips together and tried to radiate politeness at the foreign man who seemed to think I didn't know he was staring at my chest. "I was right here."
"Yes, Shahzad has already gone into great detail about my choices."
"Shahzad knows you're here?" It was starting to get dark. It wouldn't be long before need tore us apart again.
"In Isman, yes. Here in the palace, less so."
Then there it was, that smile that pulled me into trouble straight after him. I fought the impulse to return it. "You'd better say something back to your prince." Jin said something quick in Sichuan. I only caught the edges of it, but it sounded like he was telling him that Mirajin wasn't so economic a language as Sichuan. He barely waited for Prince Bao's answer before turning back to face me.
"I came to make sure you leave this place tonight.
Even if we don't manage to get anyone else out, you're coming with us. Do you understand?" A smile pulled at my mouth in spite of myself. I ignored the grin Prince Bao gave me back, clearly thinking I was smiling for him. Are you saying you're here to rescue me?
Jin raised a